This is Lori Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm speaking with Desiree Hellegers and Robin White, longtime activists and co-creators of the new online resource, The Thin Green Line is People History Project, documenting Pacific Northwest fossil fuel resistance. Welcome, Desiree and Robin. Nice to have you on the other end of the microphone for change.
Thanks
for having me.
Desiree and Robin are frequent contributors to the Old Mole Variety Hour and are a community-based research team with the Collective for Social and Environmental Justice at Washington State University, Vancouver, where Desiree teaches and Robin serves on the university's Native American Community Advisory Board. So let's start. Tell us about the background and what prompted this project, the Thin Green Line as People.
I think it was really, first off, attending a lot of hearings related to the fossil fuel struggle. So Robin and I were both involved in different ways. And I think, you know, I want to say Robin way more consistently than I. Just hearing the courage and the passion of ordinary people stepping up and consistently at hearing after hearing to really struggle to protect the Pacific Northwest from having these, you know, being transformed into a toxic fossil fuel transit corridor. And I think particularly when Bill McKibben came through in 2013 and basically spoke about the Pacific Northwest emerging, and I think Vancouver specifically, emerging as a great choke point in the struggle for the survival of the planet as we know it, that seemed a really clear indication that WSU Vancouver in particular really needed to step up and have some role actively institutionally in documenting the struggle and helping to raise public awareness about the stakes in the struggle. So we really didn't want to see these voices and these documents disappearing, and one of the things that we were hearing is that eventually the documents might be much more difficult to get access to, that they might be buried by the fossil fuel companies, and we're finding out that that's actually fairly accurate in that, you know, some of the documents that were readily available online, now you have to wait, you have to file a public documents request, and it takes much longer to get them. But I think one of the other real inspirations for the project was the Seattle Civil Rights and Labor History Project out of the University of Washington, which, you know, kind of provided a really good model of how to collect a variety of resources to document a struggle. And in this case, you know, this struggle is, you know, very much living and ongoing, and we're trying to, you know, load documents just as the struggle is kind of unfolding. And I just want to mention the participation of a couple other people in the project, including Daria Ruggles, Wade Ferguson, Antonio Zamora, who shot some of the video, and Barbara Ford, who's been really helpful in keeping the project moving. So I'm just going to punt to Robin.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of incredible things on here. This touches on so many parts of our lives. You know, it really does with economy and social structure and climate collapse and health and whatever you can think of, it really does. And I think one of the important things to remember here, though, is that water is the most important thing here. I think that's the common denominator in anything. And, you know, we really feel that if you're doing the right thing for water, then you're doing the right thing for everything else in the world. So, a lot of these people are water protectors. I think that's kind of an important thing to remember. There's some great things on here. You can get to what all the different actual what the stakes are in the fossil fuel struggle. So, you know, it kind of gives you an overview of everything that you can think of that we're, you know, that's on the line for what's going on in the Northwest and in the world.
What's the significance of the title of the project, The Thin Green Line as People?
Thin Green Line was, I think, coined by Sightline Institute, correct. And then, we were kind of thinking there's the old movie of Soylent Green, which was a classic cult film. If you haven't seen it, 1973, Soylent Green. It's about the corporatocracy taking over society, and it ends, I'll kill the movie probably, but it's worth watching, that the Soylent Green is people. They were using all the people to make food to feed the people. So I think it was kind of a real kind of a lead in to what's happening today. And I think the importance of that is, so we kind of thought that the thin green line, as people said a lot about what it actually is that we're doing, and that everything about humanity is going into this.
Yeah, the attempt to kind of stave off this really dystopian future that we just got a quite an interesting glimpse into with the wildfires. And, you know, I just want to speak to another absolutely major element and driving dimension of the project, and that's to figure out how to really fast track the fossil fuel struggle into principally universities, but also high schools as well. So universities, community colleges, and high schools. How do we take this kind of wealth of materials that's emerging from the struggle and really broaden the struggle by ensuring that it's being taught you know, throughout the region? So another real inspiration for the project was Rethinking Schools and the Zen Education Project and the work that they're doing on climate justice in Portland public schools and across the country, and thinking about, you know, how do you kind of make use of these documents and how do you bring them into the university classroom as well. So we're really interested in working with people around the region who look at the site and think about ways that they might integrate some of these documents into their own teaching. And there's videotapes, there's oral histories, you know, there's kind of a wealth of multimedia elements in the project. So we definitely want to hear from teachers and professors who want to figure out how to integrate this into their work.
And you've got video clips from hearings, resolutions, ordinances, legislation, just really a wealth of documentation that should help both educators and activists in really continuing to mount this necessary struggle.
There's a section that's particularly devoted also to divestment campaigns. So I just want to do a little shout out for that, because I think one of our best hopes for the future of, you know, that doesn't look like Soylent Green, that doesn't look like what we just saw with the wildfires, is for universities, community colleges, churches, you know, faith communities across the region to be stepping up and really struggling to mount effective divestment campaigns. And Robin has been, you know, sort of constantly reminding me of the importance to focus also on reinvestment. So, you know, we have some documents around that, and we definitely welcome contributions for documents that we might have omitted.
So you're collecting information. People can continue to contribute to the project by contacting you, and you have contact information on the website.
That's correct.
This is a living, yes, breathing thing that's going to continue. So we really want to have that involvement with everybody that's doing this. You know, it's an important aspect of that, and so we need people to help us build it and keep it moving.
Desiree, I'm speaking with Desiree Hilligers and Robin White, the co-creators of a new online resource, The Thin Green Line is People, Documenting Pacific Northwest Fossil Fuel Resistance. And we've been talking about the wealth of resources available for activists, for educators, and the ways people might continue to contribute to the site. Robin, earlier we were talking about just some of the important documents and oral histories that are particularly powerful on the site that amplify the diverse voices defending the ecosystems and communities of the Pacific Northwest. Do you want to say something about some of the people featured here?
Well, yeah, you know, I think this is really important. I mean, sure, we all know some very, very famous people that have been involved in this struggle, and I think it's, you know, their work is extraordinary and so important. But the Thin Green Line is People is about people and how important it is that these people, you'll see a lot of these, I tried to concentrate on people that weren't those famous people. People that finally just had enough, and they realized what was going on, and they stood up and they said, no, we're not going to allow this to happen. We're going to do the right thing, no matter what the consequences of that were. And a lot of times to great economic disadvantage or political or social disadvantage or even physical danger. And I think that is what we're trying to say here, is that we can do this, that it's important to do this, that there is other people there behind you, that you don't all you have to do is have the passion and the moral value to stand up to what's going on.
Well, Robin, you are one of the people featured in the activist oral history interviews. And then there are a variety of environmental activists and Native activists, as well as Kater Claybaugh, who's president of the ILWU Local 4 in Vancouver. Anything else you want to say about these oral histories?
Yeah, Kater's here you've got union leaders that, and like he says, I think one of his quotes was, who would have thunk it? Kind of a blue-collar union worker signing up with a tree-hugging hippie environmentalist. But we are there. Danita Fry, who sadly has passed, was born and raised in Alaska, and her family, lived off of the oil boom up there. And her mother was, she said something about her mother was saying, oh, those crazy people down there doing that kayaktivism and stopping that stuff coming up to Alaska on the bridge. And she says, Mom, I'm one of those people. Lana Jack, who's one of the last of her last women of her people, expressing the tragedy of hundreds of years of this abuse and where it's getting us and what it means to really protect the water and to protect humanity. There's Jody McCaffrey, she's been fighting a project down in Coos Bay for 15 years. And like she said, I was just a woman who went to a meeting and I didn't know nothing about any of this. And all of a sudden she said, that ain't right. And she's been fighting that project for 15 years. And she's by far not the person you would think would be the environmentalist fighter, but she is. And I think that's important because she is the thin green line. She is people.
People will be inspired by these activist oral histories on the website. And thanks, Robin White and Desiree Hellegers, for your work on this. Co-creators of The Thin Green Line is People, documenting Pacific Northwest fossil fuel resistance. We'll link to that site on the Old Mole KBOO webpage. And we're going to close with one of the activist oral history excerpts from The Thin Green Line. Here is Lana Jack, Salila Wyam, reminding us of what's at stake in this climate justice struggle.
Our people have been under termination for the last 60 years since the flooding of Salila Falls. And the torch was handed to me by my mothers. So I come from a long line of maternal ancestors at Salila. I was born into the activism. They're water protectors from the get, trying to save Salila Falls and keep it from being flooded. And at the same time, trying not to be exterminated as a people. But our people have been here hundreds of thousands of years, and we're still under extermination. My ancestors, the Salila Wyam, who greeted Lewis and Clark, and then for their hospitality, then in turn, our inherent sovereignty was blatantly just ignored and thrown aside as if though we didn't exist. For some of us, it's our very existence. For many of us out on the front lines in Standing Rock, we didn't stand there in our selfish need for greed, for popularity. We stood because there were many people out there in prayer. It was a prayer camp. It wasn't a protest camp. When we weren't eco-terrorists who deserved to be shot at with rubber bullets and have concussion grenades and be sprayed with water in sub-zero temperatures, probably highly contaminated water. I left and most of the vet people that were in the barracks that I shared space with returned home. And three out of the four ended up in the intensive care because their kidneys and organs were shutting down. So it speaks to the chemical warfare and germ warfare that they sprayed on us regularly. I have PTS behind all of it.